J-Tech Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And now, here are your hosts, Tom Bastek and Mike Jacobs.
Hello and welcome in. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. I'm Tom Bastek.
And I'm Mike Jacobs. We are mixing it up a little bit this week.
We are indeed. Mike, it's Labor Day, so happy Labor Day.
Hey, happy Labor Day.
We've been laboring for a long time, and in fact, we've been laboring behind the scenes. And this week, I think we got something special that we want to bring to you guys instead of our typical feature game show.
Yes. Well, and so I think the behind the scenes is the key part there, because while many people know the podcast that we do on a regular basis, there's a lot of stuff we do in addition to that that has not yet seen the light of day. And here in Labor Day, we figured we'd take the week off of recording a new show and bring you one of those side projects.
Fantastic. Fantastic. But first, we should probably hit the news at hand. Obviously, because it is a holiday weekend, we didn't want to inconvenience Christian to bring him in. But I think the biggest bit of news, and probably the only bit of news that anybody's talking about, Mike Richards out as EP for Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune now, Mike.
Yeah. And well, so I was going to say, who didn't see this coming? I got to say, I was... Surprise is not the right word, but I had not considered the Wheel of Fortune angle. It makes sense. I'm not surprised by it. It's just it hadn't occurred to me. But then when it happened, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Why would that not happen?
Yeah, I guess for me, I thought Sony thought that they had healed up. And I was very concerned, like, yeah, you think you're healing up, but you're really not healing up here. Like, there's still a lot of people who are very hurt by what happened here, and you're going to hear about it sponsorship-wise and everything else. And I think they're trying to get ahead of the curve here to make sure they don't lose sponsorship by saying, hey, look, not only did we make the guy step down from hosting, but we got rid of him as EP too. Don't drop your sponsorship. We care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're kind of onto something there, maybe. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not sure that, at least from my point of view, that it really matters the reason why. You know, it's interesting because, like, I don't want to be like, this guy doesn't deserve a job. Like, I don't feel right wishing ill will on people, even if they've, you know, made poor choices in the past. But... I definitely do not think he should have been involved with Jeopardy more, simply because of the shadow that it casts over the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, but so I see what you're saying. Like, you're thinking, like, to yourself, the punishment of no longer being on Jeopardy is enough in your eyes that you didn't need to see him wiped from Wheel of Fortune as well.
Well, yes, the executive producer role as well. You know, again, it's not that I think it was the wrong move. It's just like, I don't know if I would have considered it. And like, to me, a lot of what the decision is that Jeopardy is a, you know, it's almost sacred in a way, and I guess Wheel of Fortune is too, but it just doesn't feel the same way as Jeopardy does. It's also a situation that is sort of unrelated, right? Like, I don't know. I'm having trouble kind of justifying my thought process here. Again, I don't want to say it's unfair, but I also don't know that I would have personally made that decision if I were in charge. Now, there may be conversations going on in the Wheel of Fortune producer's room that I have no idea about, and maybe they have been getting all sorts of flack, and this wasn't just a, you know, side blow or something like that, that maybe it was a little more intertwined than I know. I can't say that one way or the other.
Right. I think for me, I'm like, listen, you make your bed, you sleep in it. I don't wish ill will on anybody, but this guy kind of like wished ill will on himself in his own way. And so if this is part of the remuneration for it, then this is part of the remuneration for it. You know, I feel like I'm sorry that he lost both jobs, but at the end of the day, if you hadn't been really, really awful, you wouldn't have lost any of the chops.
Well, and you know what it reminds me of is those, you see it in movies a lot where like a guy cheats on his wife and then someone else tells his wife and he goes to that person and says, "You ruined my life." And it's like, no, I didn't.
No,
you did.
No, you didn't. Yeah.
I was just the person that, you know, facilitated the information. You did the act that ruined your life. And I think that that's really what it boils down to. And so that's why I'm like hesitant to really try and make this claim one way or the other, because I don't know. I need time to sort of marinate it in and see. At the end of the day, though, he made his bed. He's got a lie in it.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, there's a lot of folks out there that are like, okay, Sony has one more thing they need to do to make this right, and that's hire a person of color or hire a woman to take the job. And, you know, my feeling is that I don't know if I think that that is a mandatory thing for Sony, but I also feel like that's a, like, kind of a mandatory thing for everybody right now. Like, they're embracing minorities, whether it's a female minority or a person of color minority. The world is embracing that. And you might as well jump on the bandwagon, because that's what's being desired by the American public.
Well, and what I think is interesting about it is that it's, you know, an idea of more embracing diversity. And I think there's a lot of, like, buzzword surrounding that phrase, right?
Sure.
And I think because of that, people tend to lose sight of what that really means. And it doesn't necessarily mean this like hitting quota and affirmative action kind of thing. But what it means is not excluding viewpoints, right? Like, by putting another, you know, white man in the role, we are limiting the cultural influence that could be brought to Jeopardy. Does that make sense?
It makes total and complete sense. All I can tell you is that everyone that has been on the show as a substitute host would be better than this young YouTube kid that's been bagging on Jeopardy for like the last, I don't know how many years. I want to say his name is like Matt Tam or Tam Matt or something. I don't even know. But he's a social media junkie that apparently claims that Jeopardy is rigged. And now all of a sudden there's a huge petition that has 35,000 signatures to make him the next Jeopardy host.
Well, this is not a thing I've heard of, but I will tell you right now, I have no idea who you're even talking about, but I am 100% off board with that plan. The idea of like the internet celebrity, like the entitlement that those people have, just sickens me.
And it's not all of them, so be careful.
No, you're right. I'm not gonna say they all, though, painting with a broad brush, and I shouldn't do that. But those that make themselves known in situations like this, like, this is publicity stunt and nothing else. He has no interest in really being a Jeopardy host. He has probably doesn't even care if Jeopardy's rigged or not. He's just it's a sad cry for attention.
Yeah, it's not a cash grab, it's an attention grab.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we'll see who it is and how it works out. And obviously, we'll be bringing Christian back next week to give us the latest and greatest in what's going on with news. But, Mike, at this point, why don't we rock right into what we're going to do? And why don't I let you, because you're the one that facilitated this, explain to our listeners what we've got on tap for them this week.
Absolutely. So way back when, you've heard me talk about my career at Turner back in the day. I used to work with a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Mador. And one day we ran across a tape when I worked in the tape room that said Jeremy on Price is Right. And we're like, what the heck is this? And we pop it in, and sure enough, it's him on an episode of The Price is Right. And at the end, he wins the whole dang thing. It was hilarious to find, and like, he's in there looking like a little baby, and he's really young, not because he's a baby. Right. Not literally a baby. He's college aged, but he just compared to when I knew him. He was actually there with another buddy of ours who you knew as well, Tom. His name is Jesse. He worked with us as well at Turner.
I still know Jesse. Yeah. He's actually part of my fantasy football league.
Oh, nice. I did want to bring that up just because I believe we mentioned him in more casual conversation without much clarification. So just so the listener knows that Jesse is a mutual friend of all three of us, who was also in that. He wasn't on the episode, but he was in the audience with Jeremy. But since we've been doing this podcast, again, this was like this interview happened real soon after we started.
I want to say we were in episode 3 or 4 when we originally did this episode.
It was definitely it was the first one we did, right? Because it was before. Sure. Yeah. Anyways, as someone who was hosting a game show podcast, I was like, oh, hey, I know someone that was on and won one of the most famous game shows of all time. So I contacted him and asked him if he'd like to do an interview with us. And luckily, he graciously accepted. And as you'll hear in the interview, it sounds like he really had not only a great time there, but a great time with us, like reliving the memories and things. I think it's one of those once in a lifetime experiences that, you know, just stays with you forever.
All right. Well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy this week interview with Jeremy Mador, the big winner from Price is Right. Enjoy.
All right, cool. So let's start off. State your name, where you're from, what show you were on, and when you were on it.
Jeremy Mador, Boston, Massachusetts. I was on The Price is Right in May 1995. It aired in September. It was a long wait.
Okay. So for The Price is Right, there's not obviously not like an audition or casting per se. But is there, as you get there, I suppose, is there a sort of casting? Do you have to play it up to get picked?
All right. So we were in a big group, and I'll tell you what, the guy that played it up did not get picked. I think the only thing we played up was that we all had gear on from our college for the most part. So we looked like a group of college kids. And there was like a casting guy. And anyone who was trying to be funny or stand out in some weird way, he was not having it. It was more like just be yourself and he'll make the decision. And he asked me, a few questions, and it was like, what's your name? Where are you from? What brings you to, what are you doing in California? That was pretty much it. And I had just said to him, you know, I just graduated. I just moved out here a week ago, and Price is Right is my favorite game show. I thought I'd take the day off and come to the game show. And me and him just had a natural rapport, to the point where when we walked away from that guy and started walking in the studio, all my friends were like, oh my gosh, you're on. There was just something natural about it where he seemed to hone in on me, and we just had a short conversation that seemed natural. And sure enough, they were right. I was the last guy to get called on the show. So we had to, you know, sit there for the whole show. Like, hope was kind of running out, and we were in commercial break, and Bob Barker was like, there's one more person that we're going to call up here. One more person. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be this group from the military, from whatever state? Is it going to be this group of elderly people over here? He was kind of just playing with the crowd. And when we came back from commercial break, I closed my eyes and I was just like, please call me. And Rod Roddy called me. It's the craziest thing. So my friends were right. They were like, We knew you were going to get on. He liked you. He liked talking to you.
So let's rewind actually a little bit, because I do want to hear what led you to going to the show. Like, what kind of, give us the lead up of the story of that brought you to the show.
Yeah. So I literally had just graduated from college a week earlier, and I had just moved to Los Angeles with a bunch of friends from college. There was probably a group of six or eight of us that went to the show, and we had all just drove cross country from upstate New York, where we were going to school, and we were trying to line up internships or jobs, whatever we could get, and it was a Friday, and we decided to not look for jobs that day. It was like, let's do something fun. We've been moving and unpacking and looking for jobs and taking interviews, and let's just have a day of fun. And so we were talking about that on Thursday night, the day before, and I had brought up the idea. I said, we should go to The Price is Right. We should go to a game show. And everyone liked that idea. This is like late night. And we called a cousin of mine who had actually been in the audience before. And we asked him, he had been living out there forever. And he told us, and not like it's any secret inside information. I mean, this is information you can get from just watching the show, but they like groups of people, whether you're a group of elderly people, military people, college kids, they like groups of people and they like to pick from those groups. And it was like that for the most part, it was like that during our show. And so my cousin said, hey, you guys should all wear your college stuff so you look like a group and you'll have a better shot of getting on. And so we got there, we woke up, we got in line, we had to wait in line about 4 hours. And it was all so exciting. I mean, we had, none of us had been to California before. We just graduated college. It's like, it's all just like young and wonderful and amazing. And we wait in line for about 3.5-4 hours, and it finally starts moving. We're like, oh, this is it. And
how many people are there?
I would say there's probably 400, something like that. And I, you know, to be honest with you, we got there early enough where I knew we were going to get in. I don't know if everyone in line was going to get in. I can't quite remember how everything works, but I remember there being about 400 to 500 people waiting to get in.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't imagine the studio holds that many.
The studio is surprisingly small. And so we had woke up that morning. We were all so excited to go and have this uniquely California experience of going, you know, because it is an entertainment capital and a lot of game shows shoot from out there. And, you know, to go to a legendary game show like The Price is Right, we were all so excited. And so we're getting ready and eating breakfast, and we're pointing at each other. We're like, how much is a blender? And someone would say, $59. And we're like, ooh, that's pretty good. I bet a blender is about $59. And we would just point at each other and we would say, dining room set, and just throw out things like $2,000. And so when you watch the show, and I do get on, and in the showcase, there is a dining room set. I actually turn to my friends in the audience, because we were just joking about that morning. Someone pointed to someone and said, dining room set, how much? And someone said, I don't know, $2,000. And the big joke was, watch, one of us gets on and we win like some pretty crappy prizes that aren't really useful to us young 20 somethings. And sure enough, you know, when I did make it to the showcase, there was a dining room set. So I turn to them and I laugh, and that was like the inside joke. So we were all excited that morning. We get there pretty early, to the point like we knew we were definitely going to get in. And we walked by, there was just a lady with a clipboard and a guy sitting in a director's chair with a clipboard. And he's the guy with all the power who's just looking, you know, who's he going to pick? And when you watch the show, and it was like this growing up, he's picking from different demographics, different ages, he's mixing it up. And I think I just got lucky. That was like really one of the luckiest days of my life. It was pretty crazy. And it was so weird because I used to watch that show growing up on snow days, you know, when school would get canceled. My grandmother, who was retired from the day I can ever remember. I mean, she was always just retired watching The Price is Right every day. And I would watch it with her. I'd watch her in the summertime when there was no school. I'd watch it on snow days when there was no school. And Bob Barker was still on when I got on. And some of those girls were still on, like Holly and Janice. There was one other, like I remember looking at them when I was in second grade, and all these years later, like I'm on a stage with them on the show. It was so surreal and so fast. It was so bizarre.
So Rod Roddy calls your name. You go down, yes. And what are you bidding on? What's the prize there? You have to.
So I have to bid first, which is definitely not an advantage. And it's a set of golf clubs. It's a brand I'd never heard of before. And I just said $399. And it turns out that everyone else overbid because the actual retail price was $500. And I think the next closest bid was $600. Everyone just kept going higher, $600, $650, $699. It just kept going down the line. And again, just more luck. It ended up being $500. They all overbid. So I get up there. And then I was hoping for Plinko. Like, who doesn't love Plinko?
Plinko!
You know? And it ends up just being this, like, 50-50 chance game. There was two pieces of furniture. It was an electric fireplace. I didn't even know that was a thing. A fire... It was on wheels. You wheel it to where you want to be, and you plug it in, and it just blows hot air at you.
I had one of those in my old house.
Oh, do you? It's like the craziest thing. I never.
Well, my old house, it was just a big giant open room, basically. So it didn't heat very well. So we had to have a little fireplace.
Yeah. So it's like this electric fireplace on wheels and this armoire. I didn't even know the word armoire when I was 20. I think I was 21 at the time. It was basically just this, you know, entertainment center type nice piece of furniture. And it was like, you know, tell us which one of these is. I think it was about $1,200, something like that. So it's just guessing. And I look the audience, you look out at the audience, half of them are pointing the one prize, the other half's pointing the other prize. I look at my friends, they're doing the same thing. They're useless. It was literally a guess. It was like, well, the armoire just seems fancier. I bet that's $1,200. And I was right. So I won
both prizes.
Yes. Yeah, both prizes.
That's the way 50-50 works.
Yeah, that's right. Just, you know, everything a 21-year-old could want. I got this, like, weird set of golf clubs I've never heard of, an electric fireplace, an armoire. I'm racking up.
All right, that's a good place for us to take a break, Mike. How do you feel about it?
I feel great so far, Tom. I'm on board with a break, though, because I got to go to the bathroom. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won.
Welcome back. You know that sound. That's the theme from Price is Right. And the reason why we played it right now is because we're interviewing one of Mike's ex-coworkers and good friends. And now I can actually say a friend of mine who was on the Price is Right. Mike, why don't you redo the quick introduction?
Yes. For those of you just joining us, we are speaking with Jeremy Mador, who was a contestant and ultimately a winner on the Price is Right.
So we were talking about prizes. You won the what do you call it, the pricing game. So you go to the Showcase Showdown where you got to spin the wheel. Tell us how that goes.
Yeah, so it's time to spin the wheel, and it's there's three of us, and I got to be honest, like the other guy that was my age that was spinning the wheel with us. I think he was like first to spin. He was like this altar boy from Chicago, and during commercial breaks, Bob Barker loved him. The crowd loved him. All the little old ladies loved him because he was this altar boy. And so you can't tell from the show because that's like the inside scoop, but make no mistake about it. Like the crowd is completely pulling for this guy. I'm having a great day. I'm having a lucky day. But when you feel the crowd's like not on your side, you know, not the best feeling. And not only that, but he spun like an 80. He spun first. The next guy goes out and then it's my turn to spin because I guess I'm the day's top winner. It's like, it's kind of a weird show. It's not like I won that much, but technically I was the day's top winner. And so I spun last, and I tried to strategically spin it to get it to land on a dollar, and it didn't go all the way around.
Wait, hang on, hang on. What strategy is there for that?
So you all, you know, we all know that if you get it, if you spin a dollar, there's like a bonus. I can't remember how much you win.
It's $1,000.
$1,000.
How do you
right?
do it? How do you spin it to get a dollar?
So I spun it real slow to try and get it to go around just enough that it would just come back around and land on a dollar. And yeah. It didn't even make it, like, it made it like halfway barely and then stopped. And the wheel is not heavy. It's big, but it is not heavy. And so I get booed by the crowd.
Of course, because the altar boy did better than you, big wimp.
That's right. The altar boy was doing better. I didn't spin it all the way around. Bob Barker, I went to go walk over and spin it again. He's like, and he had to like get in his cheap shot. He's like, now, wait a minute. All the kids at Ithaca College are watching and you didn't even spin it all the way around. Give it a good, like he could tell I was trying to be strategic. And he was basically saying, just give it a whirl. And so I did. I gave it a whirl. And I think it stops on, I'd have to watch the show. I think it stops on 20. And so he's like, spin it again. And it stops on, I'm watching it now, I think it stops on 65. Basically, I end up tying this guy at 85, okay? The altar boy spins an 85. I spin a 20 and a 65. And let me tell you, it barely makes that 65 to tie. That wheel was like, beep, beep. And that thing barely makes 65. And I tie him. And the look on the altar boy's face was like, you've got to be kidding me. This crowd loves me. I just spun a damn 85. And now I got to spin again. Like, you could just tell.
He's like, frat boy, what are you doing?
It burned him up. And so he spins again. He's sitting pretty, thinks he's got it all in the bag. Because 85, let's be honest, that's a good spin.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
So he spins an 80, right?
Oh.
And the crowd is just loving it. They're like, oh, God is on this guy's side. The altar boy spins an 80.
How are you going to win against the Lord?
How are you going to win against this guy? He's got everything going for him. He's got the crowd. Again, he's sitting so relaxed and feeling so good. Little does he know, I'm about to like ruin his day. His day. I just let it go. I just let the wheel go. A big spin from top to bottom. It goes around a bunch and it lands on 95. Like, crushed his 80. Is just really was just such a lucky day. It was nuts.
And did the audience boo you?
No, they were excited. It was fun. I think during the commercial break, it's like Bob's having conversations with certain groups and certain people and answering certain cat calls, and so you get the sense that like there were some groups that liked the altar boy, but like when it all went down live and there's a spin-off, that's exciting, and he spins an 80 and then I beat it with a 95. It really was exciting and the crowd was going crazy. It was a lot of fun. And honestly, in between, they tape it live. Like, it really is very close to an hour. And when I won the golf clubs, when I first got called out of the audience and won the golf clubs, they had me sign some paperwork real quick in between with the commercial break. And then after I won the wheel, I signed more paperwork as I was setting up for the showcase showdown. It all moves very quickly.
It's a whirlwind.
A whirlwind.
I got married by Elvis in Vegas, and it was at a place that does like 72 weddings a day. It was your wedding, the ride. It was literally 13 minutes. And I mean, we powered through the bitch. I mean, I know.
So yeah.
How's the final showcase go down?
Okay. So I'm in the showcase and everything is so surreal and moving quick. You have to keep in mind, again, I'm the last person to get called up. So this really did. There was other people on the show like that waited a long time throughout the hour. For me, I got called up at about 20 to 12 or, you know, whenever it was about 20 to the hour. I won the golf clubs, won the pricing game, won the wheel. Everything for me was one right after the other. I took up the last 20 minutes. And so it really was moving fast. There was no downtime. And so I get to the showcase and the lady next to me, I wasn't being competitive, but it was all moving fast. I wasn't really making chit chat with her, but she was trying to chit chat with me. And I was like, really just trying to stay calm. And she was sweet. She kind of blew it. She like overbid, she got booed. And I'll tell you what, for me, I was so broke. Like I was really hoping for a car. Like I went to college on college loans, a lot of college loans. And I was driving the dumpiest car at the time. Okay. It's 1995. I was driving a 1980 yellow Thunderbird with a brown roof that was rusting. It was like, there literally were girls that wouldn't date me because they were like, this guy's a loser. Look at this car, man. Like I really needed a new car. So for the showcase, I was hoping for that. There was none of that. It was kind of a weak showcase. I mean, we've all watched that show our whole lives. And I was surprised at how weak the showcase was. So we come back from the commercial break. I'm the day's top winner. And so that's good because I get to bid or pass. And usually you pass because the second showcase is better. So the first showcase, I think, was washer dryer, which I didn't really need. And it was washer dryer, a bread maker, and I think a camper. I think it was those three things. And the camper, in hindsight, I probably should have bid on the first showcase because I probably could have sold the camper for some good money. So I passed.
Well, and a bread maker, you can make bread.
You can make bread, you know, when in doubt.
You'll never go hungry again.
So I pass. And she bids 23,000 something. And as soon as the numbers 23 come out of her mouth, the crowd just turns. And they're like, oh, no, no. Like the crowd knew it was not a good bid. They did not like it. She didn't feel confident about it. And so then the second showcase starts. And I am like so excited for trips, car, something, like something big.
Instead, you get a dining set.
Dining set, right at which was the joke that morning. I start laughing. My friends are laughing in the audience. A dining set. It was crazy. And then they counted the dishes. They're like, and a dinette set. And they like zoom in on the dishes. It's like, oh my God, that counts as a prize. So it's the dining room set, the dishes. And then they're like, and this lovely fruit basket, which in reality turned out to be a 6-month supply of citrus and mint jelly. So it was like every month I would get this huge basket of oranges and mint jelly that counted as a prize in the second showcase. So in my
it's
head,
the most
I'm just
bizarre
like,
prize I've ever heard of.
The
that
lamest
the slab
prize.
Of meat I saw once.
A slab of meat, nice. Yeah, and then
wow! As a college kid, you're just excited AF right now,
right? Right. So, and then the last prize was like this electric piano, which at, you know, Jesse and I were making music and making beats and electronic music. So that was like, okay, that's kind of cool. And that was it. It was pretty no frills. And so in my head, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, please, you go ahead.
I, so in my head, as each prize is getting presented, as silly as every prize was, I was just like, dining room set, 5,000, electric piano, 5,000, dishes, 1,000, fruit and jelly, 500. Like, that's how I put it together. And so I placed my bid of 11,500. And then we come back from the break and signing more paperwork in between breaks, moving fast. There's like, they really do tape it live. There's just no time really to spare. Come back from break. They announce my opponent's real price of her showcase, and she overbids. They play the sound effect. It's like, whew, okay. All I have to do is come under, and I'm good. I win. And Bob pulls out the envelope, and he sees that I came close. And so as a good broadcaster he is, he plays that up. He's like, Jeremy, you bid 11,500. The actual retail price of your showcase is 11,000. And he lets it hang for a second because it's like, it's close. And he goes, 11,988. You're the winner. So like, I came within, I was just over $400. And I think if you come within $400, you win both. So I was like really on the money. Hands went up in the air. They told my friends to rush the stage. The credits start rolling. He's talking about puppies getting neutered and spayed. And we all start sitting around this dining room table. We're like, we're going to have the biggest party here. It's going to be amazing. And we're all joking about the dining room table. And Bob's like, Jeremy, get over here. Say hi to your mother. Stand right there. And so him and Janice were trying to get me to stand at a certain place. And I stood there. I waved to my mom like he's telling me. He's like, and he's talking to me off camera. He's like, there you go. You're on TV. You got to look at the camera and wave. He's like saying all these little things that you can't hear. And then we go off the air. Jesse comes up, puts his arm around. We go off the air. And they say, and we're out. And it's all like clockwork.
All right, another good spot for a break. Mike, take us out.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won.
Hello.
Hello. I'm Nikki, a gaming noob.
And I'm Eric, a lifelong gamer. And we are Press Any Button.
Press Any Button is a video game podcast hosted by two married gamers. For all experience levels.
In each episode, we cover a different video game's past, present, and future while adding a fun twist.
That's right. We present game challenges to each other, and if it's not accomplished, that person must show off their best rapping skills.
So if you like the podcast you're listening to right now,
be sure to find us on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. Episode number 51, segment number 3 of America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. This week, the game show guys, that'd be Mike and I, are doing something a little different. Michael.
We are interviewing a contestant and winner of the beloved game show The Price is Right. Please welcome back Jeremy Mador.
And they say, and we're out. And it's all like clockwork. Bob Barker comes over, shakes my hand, says, congratulations, well done, son, or you know, something like that. He was very professional, a lot of makeup up close. Like, you cannot tell on TV, but up close, the guy looks like the Joker. Like, there's just makeup just caked on, like, in between hairs, and it's just very elaborate, but he looks great on camera. So he shakes your hand, gives you some word of encouragement, he leaves, and then someone comes behind him and gives you an 8x10 glossy that he signs, and you get the black and white 8x10 glossy. And so I have that somewhere. It's ripped, but I have my name tag and my picture. And then the Barker beauties walk off stage, and they just kind of wave from a distance and smile. They're nice. And then you're brought backstage to sign more paperwork. They kind of read a lot of legal stuff to you, and it moves so quickly. They're like, it's just someone who does this job every day. They just have a piece of paper. They're like, no cash for prizes. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They just read you all this like legalese and rules, and you just have to sign and say yes. And basically, I got on that show at like 20 minutes to noon. And by the time I got out, it was, it was like 25 minutes later, and I'm in the parking lot, and I'm just like, what the hell just happened? That was crazy.
All right. So one thing we've talked to a lot of people about is the taxes that they have to pay on prizes. Now, I feel like specifically in this instance, it's a little different because it's like stuff you kind of don't want. How did that, like, did you end up having to pay for stuff? Did you sell them? How did all
that
work?
Or did you just give it up and say, I don't want to take it home?
Right.
So I was on in May. The show aired in September. And after it aired, the prizes started coming in gradually from September when it aired till like the end of March. It started just trickling in little by little. And I took out like a storage unit. I was like, because my parents lived, we had a small apartment. And I was like, I don't know where I'm going to put a dining room set and all this stuff. Armoire, electric fireplace, like really big stuff. And so I rented this storage unit. They gave me a heads up that like things would be coming in. And they actually called me one time, and they said, the first time they called me, they said, the prizes are going to start coming in. We don't have the golf clubs anymore. So you can have scotch glasses, a telescope, or camping equipment. And the camping equipment was pretty nice. It was like, a sleeping bag, a nice tent. And so I took that, and I actually just got rid of that stuff recently. I had that for a long time. And, so that was like the first thing to come in, and then all this like useless furniture. Oh, they wanted to know. They called me another time and they asked me, do you want the fruit and the jelly to come to you every month, or do you want us to send it elsewhere? And so I took one shipment of it, but then the other five I sent to like my grandmother and like some of the people I was on the show with. Like, I think I even sent one to Jesse as a joke. And so that got rid of that. And actually, just to back up, I used to watch that show, like I said, every day with my grandmother. If there was a snow day or if there was no school in the summer, I would watch it with her when I was a real little kid. And so she was the first person I called. So when we left that show, we went out and got margaritas and just started partying. And it was a Friday anyway. And I end up calling her. You know, California is 3 hours behind. So by the time we got home that night, I called her pretty late East Coast time. And I was like, Nana, it's Jeremy. You're never going to believe what happened today. And she's like barely awake. She's like, oh, what, dear? And I'm like, Nana, I was on The Price is Right and I won. And she goes, I think you've had too much to drink. You need to call me tomorrow. It was so deflating because she was correct. I did have too much to drink, but I was so excited to like share the good news with her. And this is before cell phones. So like we were out, I had to wait till I got home to a landline to call her. And she shut it down pretty quick. And I called her the next day and I called, she still didn't believe me. And I got so frustrated. I was like, Nana. And she hung up. I ended up calling my mom, my aunts, uncles, called all these people. Word finally, they all believed me right away, of course. And then word circles back to her like, did you hear? Jeremy was on The Price is Right and won. And she's like, oh my gosh, I thought he was drunk. I didn't think he was telling the truth. And they're like, no, Nana, why would he do that? Like, he's telling you because you grew up watching the show with him. So anyway, they get so excited that it, so I was on in May, I called them right away and it aired in September. And my grandparents were just telling everyone. They could not wait for this day. They were so psyched. So I just wanted to like include that because that was pretty funny. So yeah, so after it aired, the gifts start coming in. I got this storage unit. And really, like I said, I just needed money. I'm just out of school. I don't really have a good paying job yet. So I'd gotten a storage unit. And this lady I worked with, I was working in a kitchen at the time. And this real sweet lady that I worked with for years there, because this was like my high school job and I was still working there during college and after college. She's like, oh, all the furniture you're describing, I could use all of it. I'll take it all. I'll take it all. And I was like, really? She's like, all of it. And it's like, okay, that's easy. I'm going to get it all delivered to the storage place. And so anyway, long story short, it was like Price is Right said it was all worth $16,000. I ended up selling the piano back to at wholesale to this music shop. And that was helpful. And the lady that I worked with ended up buying all the furniture, I think for like $8,000 or $9,000. It really helped me. Like I got a better car. I got out of credit card debt. Like I cannot tell you how clutch it was to be on that show and be able to translate that into some money at the time, like, because it really was check to check, barely getting by. And it was like some of the best moments of my life being that broke, but there was some anxiety in being that broke. And so having that money was incredible. And so I put it all in that storage unit. It would get there shipped gradually. And by March, it was all there. We were all settled up. And I sold all the big pieces, the furniture to the lady. I sold the piano to the music shop. And tax time was coming up. You know, like April was right around the corner. And I was doing my own taxes. I'm sure not doing them properly. Positive, I wasn't doing them properly. Like, creative television guy suddenly taking a stab at accounting, coming off a game show. Like, honestly, I paid $500 in taxes on those prizes. I can tell you that's probably not correct, but the IRS never came back. Like, the Price is Right gave me paperwork to submit for taxes. I submitted it. I paid the $500. It was what it was. It all worked out. You know, $500 was a lot for me at the time, and luckily they didn't come searching for more. And that's how that worked out.
Well, and I love that you were able to sell it, like you say, and get some cash, because I feel like that's a thing you always think of when you watch the show, is like when those, you know, showcases come up and you can tell when it's like the person is not the demographic of that showcase. And you're like, well, at least they can sell it and get some cash, but you never really know that you can sell an armoire, right?
Yeah.
it's good to hear a success story out of that.
I'm just going to keep the armoire until I'm 70 and everything's going to be fine.
Man, I'm telling you, like dishes, I had to sell the dishes. Like, luckily that lady took it all. And that was huge. She was so psyched to have it. It was like awesome for her. It was awesome for me.
Yeah, the fact that she had $9,000 to give you is amazing.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It was a huge help. And I love that show. Like, there's no other show that I'd rather be on. And I was on it when Bob Barker and the Barker Beauties, like the time I was on and the way that it all went down, the timing of it and that I won. It's just like an incredible memory. It was awesome. It was amazing.
Well, so as someone that grew up watching it a lot, that brings up two questions to mind. One is, you touched on earlier the size of the stage, but what felt different about the show? Like, obviously it feels surreal being on there, but was there anything where you were just like, that is not what I expected at all?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, the size of the studio being small, I think the wheel not being heavy was surprising. It was all moving so fast. Those were the only two things that I remember being like, wow, this is a tiny studio. And oh, the wheel really isn't that heavy.
Did you feel like you were well prepared for the game? Were you pretty confident once you got up there that you were going to do well, or were you nervous? How did you feel?
I think I'm pretty good at estimating things, having no idea. Like even that morning when we were joking around and we were all throwing out prices on blenders and toasters, I'm telling you, the numbers that I was throwing out were close. There was a girl in our group throwing out numbers where it's like, you shouldn't get on. You're not going to
do well. Sounds like they picked well then out of your
group. And you know what? And in the end, like I was guessing the right stuff and I came very close in the showcase. And, so it's all just estimating and trying to stay under, so you don't just kill it all. But I will say, I'm out there with a bunch of Ithaca College students. So word travels back to Ithaca College that, you know, one of their students got on. And so Jesse was a year behind me. So I stayed out in LA and was looking for a job for a little longer. Jesse had to go back to school. And he said, hey, when the show is on in September, I'm going to have a big party and you need to come back to Ithaca and come up for it. And I said, okay, I will. And there was like an article in the school paper. And from what I heard, there was, because the article in the school paper had it had a photo of all these kids watching The Price is Right live in the student lounge. And, so that was pretty cool. Like it was an article in the paper. I was interviewed for that. And then when Jesse did have that party that weekend, it's like, I'm like pumping the keg for someone. And this guy's like, hey, you're the guy on The Price is Right. And so like word kind of traveled a little bit. People saw it locally. And so that was pretty fun.
That's great. You were on there in what I would consider to be the peak of Price is Right with Bob Barker, like you said, Bob's Beauties, and Rod Roddy is the host. Did you actually get to like meet any of them outside of just being on the show? Do you get any time with Bob at all?
No time with Bob at all. In fact, honestly, after the first pricing game where I was on stage and I had to guess between the armoire and the fireplace, there was like this time where he's standing next to me and they're adjusting lighting or whatever it is. It's commercial break and we're just kind of standing next to each other and I don't really know what to say. And he doesn't really know what to say to me. And it's just another day on the job for him. And to me, I'm just kind of starstruck. And it was this kind of like awkward silence where I wish I could have been a little more comfortable to talk to Bob. But I didn't get to talk to it's been so long. I want to say at the end of the show with Holly, I had said to her, I used to watch you as a kid on this show. I can't believe I'm on. She probably hears that all the time. And, but they're all really nice, but I didn't get any time with anyone. I will say during one of the commercial breaks, like Bob Barker has this earpiece where the producer's talking to him and feeding him stuff and reminding him of stuff. And there was someone from my school had done an internship at The Price is Right, and his name was Alan Asarch. And so during the commercial break, I saw Bob grab his earpiece and like listen closely. And then he says to me, he goes, do you know Alan Asarch? I said, I do know Alan. He was in one of my production classes. He's like, he was an intern with us. He interned last year. I said, oh, okay. And so like they're feeding him small talk where if they didn't feed it to him, there'd just be more awkward silence, you know.
That's great.
Oh, yep. So here's the craziest thing. Okay. I'm heading to Ithaca to go see the show's going to air in September. I'm heading up there with a buddy of mine and my grandparents are so psyched to that the show's going to air. And I pick up a buddy of mine in New York and we start heading up to upstate New York and he stops off he had to do something with his dog. And my friend's parents knew that he was going to be at a certain store. And someone from this store comes out to me and they said, "Are you Dave?" And that was my friend's name. He said, "Yes." And he goes, "Is your friend Jeremy?" I said, "Yes." "Jeremy, you have a phone call." When someone tracks you down to a specific store, there's like a serious emergency going on. So my grandfather had gotten like suddenly ill. And so actually I ended up watching the show in a hospital room, and my grandfather held on through The Price is Right, and he flatlined during the credits. It was the craziest thing. This man was so excited for this show and held on and then died during the credits. And it makes me so happy that he at least held on, but it was the craziest thing. So actually, now that memory serves me, I'm sorry. I ended up going, so I had to go to the funeral and all that. And so I wasn't able to go to Ithaca to watch the show. I ended up going up like a week or two later, went up there. Jesse ended up having a party anyway. And he had a huge party and a viewing party. And he showed me the article. When I did get up there, he showed me the article in the newspaper. And I saw the photo of all the kids in the student lounge. And that guy did recognize me at the keg. But here's the weird thing, is that summer, my college loans, like I'm telling you, that Price is Right money really helped me at the time. Because I had asked my grandparents, I was just like, I didn't ask them. I was just talking to them like, "Oh, I'm so stressed out by these college loans." And they're like, we'd help you if we could. We promise we would. We can't. I was like, "Oh, I'm not asking." But I'm telling you, it's almost like there's something weird that, like, I had a conversation with them about debt weighing on me, and I hope some things could turn around. And then it does turn around and buy me some breathing room with this Price is Right money. It almost seems like a sacrifice. Like, it's just weird that I grew up watching that show with my grandparents, and then they're so excited to see it. And then my grandfather dies literally during the credits. It was a crazy, crazy thing. So for me, the viewing party, I wish was better for me. I ended up watching it in a hotel room. But like, it was almost like this weird, like, parting gift that was, I don't know, maybe it was meant to be. I'm just telling you, the way it worked out was bizarre. The fact that I watched that with my grandparents as a kid, ended up winning. One of them passed, but I ended up getting left with this money that at least bought me a little more breathing room with the debt I was in. And like, it's just a strange sequence of events.
All right. So just a couple more questions is all I've got for you, and we'll get you the heck out of here. Jeremy, thank you so much for spending all this time with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Have you ever been on any other game shows?
I have not. Never tried. That's the only one I've been to. I did appreciate that it was a live quick taping, because I'll tell you, that same summer we went to a taping of Home Improvement, which was like a big deal show in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
4 hours.
Oh.
4 hours. Lots of retakes and redos to the point where the joke isn't even working anymore. The audience isn't laughing. It took up half your day. And so the fact that like Price is Right was live and quick was kind of cool. It was a much quicker experience.
Nice, nice. When you were growing up, obviously you grew up with the Price is Right. Do you watch any game shows now? Do you have a favorite that you like now?
The only thing I've seen now is sometimes I've watched clips of Steve Harvey's Family Feud, and it kind of cracks me up. He's, you know, he is not like a classic broadcaster like Bob Barker, like we were just talking about, but he cracks me up. I love how he interacts with the guests. He will, if they say something stupid, he will call them on it. He lets the crowd know that he does not agree with what they just said. I love his face and the way he hosts that show. I don't watch it regularly. I've just watched some funny clips, kind of greatest hits on YouTube of it. And I know they tape it here in Atlanta. I probably should go. But that's the only game show I've really watched since my days of watching Price is Right as a kid.
Well, Mike will be the first one to tell you that he really hails from the same roots, if you will, the same dirt as what's-his-face did Groucho. From You Bet Your Life with the same
like the reaction is not totally to tell a joke, it's just to look at the audience and be like, fill in the joke here, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a good point. I could see that.
Do you have any advice you'd give anybody who want to be on a game show that has never done it, or that, you know, has thought about it, but, you know, or maybe really, really wants to do it and has never done it?
I think it's a really cool experience to be a part of it. Like, I had never seen television taped live, so you get to see how that works. And, you know, you might be able to be a part of it as well. I do think it's just a cool, fun experience to have, even if, obviously, if you don't get called up. It's just a fun thing, once in a lifetime thing to go check out. So I definitely encourage that. And if you, you know, and when you're going through the line to try and get casted, I can tell you, watching all the people before me, whoever hammed it up for the person did not get on. They've been doing this long enough. They can see through that. They wanted someone who was just in the moment and genuine, and they'll take it from there. Anyone who tried to clown it up, they were out. Didn't work out.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right, Mike, I think that's all we have time for today.
Yes, indeed, Tom. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for your time. We loved speaking with you. Thank you to Christian and all the folks at Buzzer Blog.
Wait, Mike. Yeah. We didn't talk to Christian or Buzzer Blog today.
Oh.
Not this week.
Oh, I mean, yeah. All right. Forget them then. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to The Price is Right for picking Jeremy.
Yes.
Thanks, everybody but Christian.
Thanks, everybody but Christian and Mike Richards.
Well, yeah. I mean, nuts to him.
Tune in again next week. We'll bring you the latest and greatest of the world of game shows. Plus, next week, we will have another featured game show for you as well.
Make sure you check us out on social media, all the regular venues, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and most importantly, tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com.
Please subscribe, share, like, and drop a review if you like what you heard.
And if you didn't like it, I hope you go see The Price is Right, but don't get picked.
Oh, God, that's rough, man. that hit home. Like,
You're right. It's so mean, but like the vast majority of people who go don't get picked. So it's like,
well, I understand that, but you are hoping that they don't get picked. I mean, you have really gone. Wow.
Well, look, after that tirade I went on YouTube Stars earlier, I'm all worked up.
All right, the YouTube star and any kind of sponsorship, and also the Price is Right sponsorship, are out the door. It's fine.
Yep. Well, sorry, guys.
See you next week, Mike.
Bye, Tom.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won, a JTAC audio production, copyright 2021. No part of this podcast may be reproduced by anyone without the express written consent of the creators. For more information or to contact us, please go to tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com. Copyright 2021, a JTAC audio production.